to read the Bible. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king of Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all of vanity. Good evening, everyone. Good to see each and every one of you. If you're visiting with us, very glad that you've come our way. And certainly we're thankful that you've had safe travel. For this month, we'll be looking at Ecclesiastes. John Life was unable to be here. I believe he's on, he's taking a little vacation, but he'll be back with us in October, that first Sunday of the month. But we will be looking at Ecclesiastes this month, and a very powerful book. Very, very powerful, and really I think it's a book that certainly brings a lot of introspection and look at our own life. I think it's a hard book to read in terms of when you read it. The things that are discussed can certainly lead you into being discouraged and perhaps depressed. And I think that it all wraps up at the end of the book, but the problem is if you just study one part of Ecclesiastes, you can find yourself in a very discouraged spot. I'm going to try to not to leave you there at the end of tonight's lesson. But when you read through it, there are some powerful things that we see in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes in the Hebrew Bible, the actual title was The Preacher. The Preacher. And certainly it is really, when you look at it, it's presented very much like a sermon would be. Is there really an attention grabber? And we see the case is being built up and really some thinking going on throughout the process, and then eventually the book is wrapped up at the end. Although I don't have too many doubts on the author, there have been individuals over time, particularly in recent years, that have started to question the author of Ecclesiastes. I really do believe it's Solomon. I think there's some very strong points that it is Solomon. If you just look at the first verse, I think it starts to narrow it down for us. The son of David, king in Jerusalem. And if you go down to verse 12, it gets even a little bit more specific. It says, the preacher was king over Israel in Jerusalem. So we have the preacher that has a connection to King David, also ruled over Israel in Jerusalem. And if we remember, we've got King Saul, King David, King Solomon, and then we remember that the kingdom divides. So to rule in Jerusalem and to be over Israel, what happens when the kingdom splits? If Israel is the north, and really you've got Judah in the south, so to be over Jerusalem and Israel, that's kind of a unique combination that puts Solomon into it. Also, when you look throughout Ecclesiastes, we do get the feeling of wisdom. I think we get that feeling of wisdom, and if you remember in 1 Kings chapter 3 and verse 9, Solomon was granted a request by God, and Solomon requests wisdom or to discern between good and evil. So when we read Ecclesiastes, I think we can definitely feel that as we work our way throughout the book, we can kind of feel the wisdom. Also, in Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 9, it gives us this idea of whoever wrote Ecclesiastes put together Proverbs. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 9 gives us the idea that whoever wrote Ecclesiastes certainly assembled Proverbs, and certainly Solomon is associated with that. I really do believe that the writer of Ecclesiastes is Solomon. I don't think there's too many places that you can go besides that. So the question is as we get into the text, why does he not want to be known as Solomon? It says, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Why is the writer, I believe King Solomon, why is he trying to shift the book, the writing, right from the beginning, from him being king to being preacher? And I think what it is he really wants you to think about the message that he's about to present. Don't think of the message because I'm king. I want you to think of the message word for word. Not because I'm king, but I want you to look at the message. I want you to consider the message, and I want you to think it through. Certainly, when we look at Ecclesiastes, I think the theme of the book is the purpose and meaning of life. And that's a powerful message when you think about it. And a big picture that we get throughout Ecclesiastes is all is vanity when it comes to things of this world. And a lot of times that is a hard pill to swallow. Because a lot of times we're very prideful as human beings. We look at things that we've accomplished, we look at things that we've done, we look at life in general, and as the book unfolds, it really gives this idea. The world, and so many things in the world, they're just vain. They're just empty. And really, so many of them are just distractions to distract us about the purpose of life. And what is the purpose of life? As the book concludes, fear God and keep His commandments. So this is man's all. But so many times in life, we get distracted, don't we? We get distracted by the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life. There's so many things going on in the world around us. But at the end of the day, what matters most? What's the purpose of life? And as Ecclesiastes wraps up, fear God and keep His commandments. Everything else is just vain, it's empty, it's useless, and it doesn't do us a whole lot of good. It's not lasting. It's like trying to grab the wind. We try to grab all these physical accomplishments, we try to get all these worldly things, but really, all these worldly things are just passing away. Really, they're useless. And certainly we see that presented throughout the book. In chapter 1, we're going to look at some things that are vain. Certainly, I think man and really kind of our life in terms of when you think about it, and when you think about also nature. But the whole idea throughout the book, even though we're going to focus on these things, is that at the end of all of this, as we discover that so many of these things of the world are passing away, where should our focus be? It should be on spiritual things. But how many times are we distracted by the things of the world? I think Ecclesiastes really challenges us. It challenges us to rise above the pursuits of the world and put those behind us and say, I am going to pursue spiritual things. Because spiritual things are the only things that will last. Spiritual things, at the end of the day, are the only things that truly matter. And so many of the things of this life are just a waste. Let's get into the text. We're going to focus on chapter 1 and see some of the vain things and see some of the things that are happening. Verses 1 through 4, I think we're going to look at man a little bit and the generation. But it says, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. I believe Solomon, why is he transferring that to the idea of a preacher? I think he wants you to focus on the message. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, vanities of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away, another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. You know, in those first few verses, I think there is a very powerful attention grabber here. Because what does vanity mean? What does vanity mean if you were to break that word down? It means futile. Nothing redeeming, no value, useless. Talk about an introduction to a lesson. If I got up here and said, useless, useless, always useless. I mean, that's a powerful intro. Everything is useless? Everything is futile? He's really going to be challenging the minds of people throughout Ecclesiastes to think about the world, think about physical things, and really when it comes down to it, we realize that so many of the physical things that people focus on don't matter at all. Vanities of vanities, all is vanity. Useless, useless, you know, all is useless, futile, not redeeming, doesn't have any value, is passing away. That is the introduction to what is about to talk about. Verse 3, it says, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? You know, throughout the book, there are going to be multiple things that Solomon is going to point out and say, this is vain, this is vain, this is vain, this is vain. In fact, it's pretty much the whole book, isn't it? Some people have tried to list those things. There's a lot of things that are useless and vain. The works of men, pleasure, labor of our hands, the quest for wisdom, earthly accomplishment, focus on life and the living, competition, stockpiling riches, trying to please everyone, money, being a good speaker, the desire to retrieve the past, death itself. All these things are things that are mentioned throughout Ecclesiastes as vain, empty, useless. It's a very powerful message because what it really challenges, I think, the reader throughout the book is drop the physical things. If you're trying to carry physical things with you, if you're trying to grab a hold of those physical things, it's like trying to grab the wind. You're trying to grab more money, but it's going to pass away. You're going to try to grab these things. You're going to try to work yourself up and accomplish things. And all of it's like grabbing at the wind. It's just going to pass away. It's not going to be there tomorrow. The things that matter are spiritual and everlasting. I think that's really the challenge throughout the book. But it takes a long time to get to that point because the book is constantly going to look at this idea of things that are futile, vain. Certainly in verse 3 it says, what profit hath man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? The idea there of profit is, what profit from all your work, you know, can you really have? And you say, wait, I work, and I see my money going up in my bank account. Wait, I work, and I have possessions. And wait, I work, and I've got some land. And wait, I work, and I built something. You know what I think Paul would say? So what? So what, you've got money in your bank account? How is that going to help you in the life to come? So what that you have all these possessions? How is that going to help you in the life to come? So what you have all this land? How is that going to help you in the life to come? Vanity of vanities, all of vanities. What profit has a man from all his labor? Certainly you can gain things in this physical life, but I think Solomon is trying to challenge us here, and he's saying, so what? You gain it all. You gain everything that you can possibly gain, and at the end of the day, if you haven't put any stock in spiritual things, then you are in trouble. It's not a big deal. These things are passing away. They'll be gone. What have you really profited from your labor and your hard work? It has brought you no advantage. Now, I think verse 3 is closely connected to verse 4 because certainly the idea of somebody laboring, what can you gain? Certainly you can gain certain things in the physical plane of life, but I think the idea is, where is it going to go? What's going to happen to it? And this he toils under the sun. I can't remember. I think under the sun is mentioned, I think I might have it in my notes, 30 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. 30 times you're going to have under the sun. Under the sun, under the sun. And I believe the idea is that throughout the book you're going to see these things that are true, and man cannot escape it. You know? Where can you be and not be under the sun? I mean, we're constantly under the sun. You can't escape these things. It doesn't matter if you move to another nation. It doesn't matter if you go to another place. These truths, I think, will follow, and they will be there. What profit hath man all his labor in which he toils under the sun? You're going to see that about 30 times throughout the book. Verse 4, it says, one generation passes away, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. You know, you think about man, how temporary we really are. You think of the psalmist talking about, well, Moses, he writes that particular psalm, where he talks about 70 years, is our life is really so small in the grand scheme of things. And you think about that. It says, one generation passes away, and another generation comes. We're kind of replaceable, aren't we? Well, one generation is going to come, and that generation is going to pass away, and another generation is going to come, and it's going to continue like that till God decides to end it. But one generation comes, and then another. We're replaceable. And that idea of even our labor does not pass on that many generations, does it? You might be able to pass a few things on to your kids, and then might perhaps go to your grandkids, but eventually, I think my dad calls it the 4 or 5 generation curse. And the idea is that when you don't work for something, you don't really appreciate it. So what happens is after so many generations, they'll just throw everything away if anything was built up. They'll just throw it away because they don't appreciate it. They don't work for it. They don't understand the hard work that went into that to build that business or whatever it is. So, you know, one generation goes and then another. And this is a hard truth that sometimes we need to think about. It's something that I think about. I'm not going to be remembered when I'm gone. I'll be lucky to be remembered by my kids, my grandkids, perhaps my great-grandkids. But at the end of the day, I'm just one little tiny grain of sand in time. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Our life, you're only on the stage for a little bit of time. What would you do with that little bit of time that God has given? That little bit of time that God has given, what would you do with that time? Well, I'm going to use it to gather all these worldly possessions. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to use all my time for that. We're not here very long. One generation passes away and another comes, but the earth abides forever. You know, it's kind of like the earth is the consistent trend here. We're just going to fade away. Is that how we're going to spend our time, is pursuing those worldly things? Of course, he makes many strong arguments throughout the book. But if you gain the whole world, what does that really matter? What have you gained if you gain the whole world? Isn't that what Mark says in Mark chapter 8, verse 36? It says, for what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world
and loses his own soul. I think that's the idea that time is getting around here, and it's going to be focused on it in many ways. But certainly that's a powerful idea. It says the earth abides forever. A lot of people have tried to make a big deal of that. They've tried to focus on that, and they've tried to lean on that in ways that's perhaps inappropriate. Because that word really means forever. It means a period of time determined by God. That word forever in verse 4, it says, but the earth abides forever. Some people say, oh, the earth abides forever. No, that word forever means as much or as long as God determines. This word is actually used, the Hebrew word is used throughout Scripture, and particularly in a lot of things in relation to the Old Testament. At the Sabbath, this word is used. It says, the Sabbath will be forever. And a lot of people point to that. Well, actually, the word means for as long as God determines. A lot of people will point to Passover. It says Passover will be forever. But that word really means, until God determines, it's over. There's many things in the Old Testament where that word is used, but that word means a period of time determined by God. And God has determined the time of the earth. But it will continue until God decides for it not to continue. And certainly 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 10 would be a place to consider on that. But the shortness of time that we have, in Job chapter 14 and verse 1, you know, we're born, we have a few days, but certainly we're just replaced by the next generation and the earth just continues on. You know, I find that almost kind of a paradox, if you think about it, because what were we created from? The dust. And in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 19, basically the idea is we are created dust and we're going to return to dust. The earth is going to stay. The earth is more consistent than we are in terms of these things and how temporary you really are. So number one, vanity. I start to look at this idea of the vanity of generation. One comes and one goes. Let's continue on, verses 5 through 8. I think there's a discussion of the vanity of nature. And there's three things that are going to be mentioned, the sun, the wind, and the river. It says, the sun also rises, and the sun goes down, and hastens to a place where it arose, and the wind goes towards the south, and it turns around to the north, and the wind whirls about continually, and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full, to the place from which the rivers come. There they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. Not only are the generations kind of vain and man's labor, but we get into this idea that nature is almost vain in some respects. Look at how it describes the sun. The sun goes up, the sun goes down. It's kind of repetitious, is it not? Kind of a little bit boring, is it not? I mean, it's a beautiful thing. I'm not trying to take away from God's creation, but you think about that. The sun rises, the sun comes down. The sun rises, the sun comes down. We see the sun, it rises, and it sets, and it repeats again and again and again. Endless, seamless repetition. It continues on with the wind. The wind blows the south, and then it goes back north. Why the wind blows one way and then another? It seems almost random, like there's no purpose. It seems like there's this constant repetition, random, almost meaningless. And then it talks about the river. Verse 7, it says, it talks about the river flowing. And the river rushes. Says all the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full to the place from which the rivers come. They will return again. I don't think Solomon's trying to be a scientist here, but what he says is pretty powerful. Because if you think about that, if you got to the bottom of the Mississippi, and you watch that river just flow into the Gulf, and you just watch all that water flow, it's kind of an amazing thought. Where is all this water going? It keeps flowing and flowing and flowing and flowing. And how in the world is it not filled up? Of course, today we know about the water cycle, evaporation and rain, and it'll rain, and then all those rivers once again will run to those bigger bodies of water. I don't think he's trying to be a scientist here, but when the Bible says something about science, it is accurate. What he's describing is accurate. But you get this idea of the waters are rushing. The waters are rushing. But what are they accomplishing? The water's not accomplishing anything. It's just going, and it's going to go right back. You know, in many ways, when we start to look at these things, perhaps we could see some of our life in this. It's another day. We go here and there with all the hustle and bustle of life. We try to rush here, rush there. But what's really being accomplished? you know, you look at verse 8, it says, all things are full of labor, man cannot express it. We see all of nature, we see all that's going on, and nature can point to God. Romans chapter 1 and verse 20, nature is a beautiful and wonderful thing. But if you just sat down and said, I'm going to look at nature, and I'm going to try to figure out why, I think it can point to God. But if you just look at nature, are you going to find any purpose? It can point us to God, but God will tell us what His purposes are through His inspired word. But look at what it says in verse 8. It says, all things are full of labor, man cannot express it. It says, the eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. We can look out at nature, we can see all these things, and we can kind of see the constant, repetitious pattern, and perhaps some of those things are hard to express, but nothing seen or heard can really bring man satisfaction. You think that you can just be satisfied with nature? I think most of us, when we look at nature, we think that there's a God, and then we wonder, what do we need to do? But I don't know if we can get satisfaction from just nature. Man isn't going to find fulfillment, purpose, satisfaction in nature. You know, what is the point of life? The sun goes up and the sun goes down. The waters rush and they just continue to rush on. And we look at all these things around us. Man is not satisfied, I think, with those things. In fact, if you just look at those things, if you just look at the physical things of life, you know what I think happens? I think that we could perhaps be sad. I think we could perhaps be depressed. But I think that really, man is not satisfied with these things. Is that if we look at nature and the world around us, we would not be satisfied and we would be missing out on something. What would we be missing out on? We would be missing out on God. A lot of times our life is kind of like nature. You're only going to have so many sunsets. You're only going to have so many sunrises. You're going to have only so many times that you're going to be blown here or there. You're only going to have so many times that you can rush and really accomplish nothing. And in the end, I don't think man can be satisfied with these things. Let's continue on verses 9 through 11. It says, that which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new. It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of the things that are to come by those who will come after. Very powerful passage there. Nothing new under the sun. We sometimes hear that reference. Certainly there's nothing new under the sun. We see so many cycles in nature and they repeat. We see the sunrise, we see the sunset, we see the wind is random, we see the water rushing on. There's so many things we can look out to the world and we see the cycles and the repeating of it. And you know the sad thing is we see so many things repeating, such as history, but we don't learn from it. Solomon acknowledges this in verses 9 through 11 here. If you look at verse 11, that's his whole focus, is that man will not learn from the past. What a sad state of affairs. Man will not learn from the past. It says, there is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. It's almost like Solomon saying, history is doomed to repeat itself. And you don't have to look too far back in history to see it repeat itself time and time again. Nations turn against God. When the nations turn against God, when they're prosperous, when their bellies are full, when they have beautiful houses, that was the warning in Deuteronomy to God's people before they went into Israel. He said, don't forget God when you have these possessions, you have these beautiful homes, and God has blessed you. Don't forget God. And yet, so many times, that's what happens. Verse 10, it's almost like he's trying to anticipate a challenge. Because what did he say in verse 9? He says, that which has been is what will be, and that which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. In verse 10, it's almost like he's anticipating somebody to say, hey, I've got something new for you. I've got something new. And you know what he says? He says, is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? And he anticipates the objection. He says, it has already been in ancient times before us. We say, well, Kyle, they're airplanes. Well, we've always traveled. And really, there's always been the laws of nature that would allow a plane to fly. You know, so much of our learning as humans, we try to perk ourselves up, but so much of our learning as humans is discovery. We discover things, do we not? We're not really inventing anything. We're just discovering that a plane can fly. We're just discovering how human life works. We're just discovering how some of these things happen. And we think we're so wise because we're discovering.
My kids discover, right? My kids discover if you drop this, you know, it'll fall.
They discovered that. Now my kid's going to run around and say that there's somebody great. Really, much of our knowledge, human knowledge, is just discovering. We're just discovering things. We're discovering the world that God made and how it works, how it operates. We're understanding the laws which He has given, and we can put those together and make them work. But God understands His creation far more than us. But He's anticipating an objection. But disease has always been around. Death has always been around. Communication has always been around. Transportation has always been around. The elements which the earth was made have always been around. We're really not inventing anything new. We're really just discovering things. In verse 11, he really does confirm that history is doomed to repeat itself, that people will not remember the things done in the past. Sarah read Ecclesiastes a few weeks ago. She says, it's a little bit hard. Because you are starting to come to terms with some heavy things in life. Our labors, pleasures, and you can just go on a big long list. All these things, so many of these things that we focus on and dedicate all our time to, they're absolutely worthless in the grand scheme of life. What can we accomplish physically that will mean anything to the next generation and next generations to follow? It'll just fade away. Even the memory of our efforts will be forgotten. I have no illusions of grandeur. When I die, I'll be lucky to be remembered by my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids, if the Lord is willing for me to live that long. Vanity is vanity. It's all is vanity. We say, well, that's kind of a depressing place to leave the lesson. What he's trying to get through to us is that what really matters in this life. If you think of all the things of the world, you will find out that they're vain, they're useless, they have no value. You know what the core message is? Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 20. Do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourself treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Don't fall to the trap of pursuing the world, because the world is passing away. In 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 7, it says, we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain that we're going to carry nothing out. If you could do one thing in this life to have your life have value, it's to fear God and keep His commandments. That's how he concludes the book. And I can tell you this, brothers and sisters in Christ, the times I have been most discouraged in my life, the times that I have been most depressed in my life, the times I've been most saddened in my life is when I focus on the things of the world. Don't focus on the world too long. It'll take you to a dark place. And I think that's what Solomon's trying to say. Because these things have no value. They have no value in the grand scheme of things. What a powerful lesson. And certainly we'll get a few more out of the book of Ecclesiastes, but perhaps you need to become a New Testament Christian tonight. Nothing matters more. Perhaps you need to get right with God. Nothing matters more. Because at the end of this life, there's a lot of things that won't matter, but our relationship with God will. Perhaps you need to become a New Testament Christian this evening. Perhaps you need to perish the church. We'd love to help you in any way we can this evening. Become as we stand as we sing.